We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What kind of mythical powers does a Sun Devil have? We got to consider that.
It's embarrassing, but we are who we are. We're not a very good team, but we're 3-1 somehow, and we got all the voters fooled, thinking we're pretty good.
Jaworski Lane at 275 pounds showed a heck of a lot of athletic ability.
Welcome to the RotoWire College Football Podcast, the Tom Zimikowski of College Football Podcast. Nick Whalen joined, as I always am, by RotoWire's lead college football maestro, guru, John McKechnie. Jonathan, this is our second Monday recap show. We kind of started this up mid-season on a whim. Wanted to break up what had become some pretty long Thursday episodes. So we'll do recaps on Monday. We'll do previews on Thursday. And boy, do we have a lot to talk about in week 11 of the college football season. Some major dominoes falling in the Big 12. We got, you know, business as usual for some top teams in the SEC. We got dominoes falling in the Big 10 as well. Where do you want to begin here? You could point me in any direction in the country and I would say, let's go.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much to unpack from this weekend. We might've been, as we mentioned on Thursday, like a little bit light on the marquee matchups, but that just set up for a very fun weekend of college football. And I think where better to start than Austin, Texas, where the Texas Longhorns, what had already been kind of a tough season for them. I mean, losing four straight going into this game, and it's like, okay, well, it's Kansas, right? And you know, Lance Leipold, good coach, but that there's simply no ingredients there at Kansas to really think that they should be able to go into Austin and get the win. And lo and behold, they didn't just win. Like, I feel like a lot of times when a superior or a severely inferior opponent takes down another, a bigger team, there's a lot of like fluky stuff that's going on. But when the final score is 57-56, that shows that Kansas was scoring on you at will throughout the course of the entire game. So like Texas, I mean, that we've seen great coaches have bad first seasons. I mean, Kirby Smart's first season at Georgia was terrible. They ended up playing in like the Liberty Bowl. I think they might have lost to Vanderbilt that year. Like
didn't Nick Saban lose to like UL Monroe or something his first year in Bama?
Yes.
I mean, this seems like a potential outlier though. I mean, this is five straight now for Texas.
Yep. And you know, unfortunately, Bijan Robinson gets an injury to his elbow. So he's done for the year. But really the big thing is, like, if you're Texas, like you can have some bumps in the road in year one. But I do feel like when Herman recruited as well as he did, it's not like that's a roster that's bereft of talent and you still turn around and you lose to Kansas. Like that's about as sobering as it gets if you're a Texas fan. Like that things you think are starting to turn around and they're even worse than you already thought.
Yeah, man. I mean, it feels like almost an exaggeration to say rock bottom, but because we've been at rock bottom seemingly like five times over the last 15 years for Texas, and it feels like we've kind of gone through the same song and dance with like Florida State, Florida, even Notre Dame at times over that, you know, 15 to 20 year time span when seemingly like, you know, four or five like major, major programs in college football history are kind of going through this weird same cycle of struggle. But man, I mean, this is this like feels definitively lower than even some of those other low points. Right. And you mentioned, you know, this wasn't really a fluky game. And I agree with you. But you see a final score of 57-56. And my first thing is like, OK, this had to be kind of fluky. You know, something crazy was happening. These teams combined for 113 points. But I mean, Texas was legitimately getting blown out by Kansas for most of this game. Like, I guess in some weird backwards way, credit to Texas for climbing its way back into this game. And I want to mention at home against Kansas, which had not won a Big 12 road game since 2008. I even went back in and like fact checked that myself, despite hearing it on TV and reading it in articles. I was like, that cannot be right. Like, how did they not just, you know, pick off one other Big 12 bottom feeder at any point in the last 13 years? But man, I mean, this is really, really bad for Texas. And, you know, I think it's already been a spiral really since halftime of that Oklahoma game, but I just don't know how you really come back from this, you know, at least for this season. I mean, this season is pretty much ruined. It's marred by five straight losses, and this one more than anything. And I mean, this seems like one of those games where you're just going to see like recruiting ripple effects for the next few weeks.
Yeah, you absolutely could. I mean, we've already started to see some programs kind of set up camp in Austin, Ohio State namely, but you know, there's a lot of high level recruits that are from the Austin area that the Texas in a perfect world would be, you know, getting without even breaking that much of a sweat. But now you're going to have all these other teams coming in, and you know, does it get better when Texas moves to the SEC? I think not. So I mean, this is, you know, a time period that's very crucial for Texas, and they're really failing that test right now. So I mean, this will have recruiting implications. You cannot lose to Kansas. I think that's like a level of like toxic loss that it is really going to be hard to move away from. Like you really don't want to have to feel like you've scrapped or wasted an entire season, but that's kind of where Texas is. And going into next year, you know, the Bijan will be a junior. They obviously still have some talent. They got to figure out what they're doing at quarterback, but all things considered, you know, like Texas does feel like it's still pretty, pretty far away from where it was even just a couple years ago when they won the Sugar Bowl.
You know, when a team gets hit with sanctions or there's a major scandal, you know, I'm thinking like Art Briles, Joe Paterno, mm-hmm. and like the program basically gets like all the players get immunity to transfer wherever they want without any repercussions. Like losing to Kansas should grant every player on Texas's roster the ability to transfer with immediate eligibility this coming week.
Yes. I mean, yeah, they didn't sign up for that. That is not what they signed up for. So that they absolutely should have the carte blanche to just go play for mm-hmm. Oklahoma or Oklahoma State that here for the rest of the season, because Texas not a safe place to be for them.
I want to touch on Florida outlasting Samford, in the same vein here, because this felt like it was kind of headed that same direction. And Florida, you know, was able to storm back and score 35 points in the second half to win that 170-52. But despite winning that game by 28 points, it still felt like a loss in some ways. 18 points, not a math guy. Still kind of feels like a loss for Florida to have it be that close against an opponent like Samford. But, you know, I mentioned Florida, you know, kind of at the beginning of our Texas talk, like these two programs are kind of living parallel lives in some ways with the dramatic ups and downs on a year-to-year basis. But it feels like right now, especially Dan Mullen, is like living week to week with his job. I think Sark, just by virtue of being there for less time, has at least a little bit of a built-in runway, as disappointing as he's been. But it just feels like, you know, even like series to series, we're like evaluating Dan Mullen's position here.
I mean, we saw a referendum, like we saw discourse on Twitter on Saturday that was along the lines of, you know, like, well, there isn't a tarmac to fire him on because it's a home game, but can you fire a coach at halftime? Like that, there was that level of discussion about Florida. And to that end, Florida has never given up 42 points in a first half ever. And they did it to Samford.
Right.
Not in the entire history of Florida's program have they given up that many points in the first half. It was insane. Like Florida would start, you know, you see these types of games where the big underdog will come out scrappy, maybe have a surprise touchdown or two. But then the other team starts landing some punches, and you know the underdog just kind of goes away. But I think there was a kick return for a touchdown from Samford, like right out, like right in response to a Florida touchdown. There was just, it felt like Samford was game for that one. Like they wanted it and they were playing extremely well. And yeah, Florida needed that second half rally, scoring 35 points in the second half to you know, stave off what would have been like that would have been the end of Mullen. Like no questions asked. But I don't know what you do if you're Florida. Like you're staring at a huge buyout for Mullen. I think it's like $12 million, and I don't think it gets less over the course of the next couple of years. So it's like you're kind of just stuck with it, unless you got to bite the bullet at some point. You know, the way that he's handled the media stuff, you know, talking about recruiting or refusing to talk about recruiting while the rest of his division mates continue to clean up on the recruiting trail. It's just, yeah, it's a mess for Florida. Last year was kind of their shot. They had a very experience laden team. Georgia was down, Tennessee was down, so the LSU was down as well, but they still lost to LSU. They were a four-loss team, and that's kind of like the high watermark for Florida right. In like the last decade. That's crazy.
Real quickly, we'll just run through a couple of the top teams in the country who really don't warrant a ton of discussion because of who was on the schedule here. But Alabama, you know, you mentioned an underdog coming in and being game. You know, New Mexico State forced a punt and then got a field goal. They were up 3-0 on Alabama. Unfortunately for the Aggies, Alabama reeled off 59 straight to win that one 59-3. An impressive enough effort that Alabama now jumps Cincinnati. They're number two in the new AP poll. You know, your Dogs were in a bit of a dog fight early on against Tennessee. I know you predicted that this one would be a little bit closer than most of the Dogs games this year. Quick thoughts. Give me like 60 seconds on the result here. 41-17, Georgia goes into Tennessee and gets that win pretty easily.
Yeah, I was surprised that Georgia deferred because I thought that would have given them an opportunity to kind of take the crowd out of it right away. But they gave Tennessee the ball first, and Tennessee, you know, opens up with a touchdown drive. They barely missed on a couple deep shots that they lost Javonte Payton early in that game. That kind of changed things. He was their big kind of deep threat guy, but no, Tennessee, it was all about surviving the script with them, because their opening script was something that totally had Georgia on its heels. But then Georgia, you know, was able to kind of rebound. And that was the big thing that me as a Georgia fan wanted to see, was the ability to get punched in the mouth a little bit and see how they respond. Cause they really hadn't been put in a difficult situation since maybe the Clemson game. Maybe that's even saying too much, but either way, you know, the defense ended up tightening up. There were a bunch of injuries over the course of the game that was frustrating. But the big thing that Georgia kind of unleashed in this game offensively was James Cook. He looked insanely good on Saturday. That was probably the best game he's played in a Georgia uniform. So that gives something to Georgia's offense that they've kind of been missing. That Zamir White hasn't had a particularly good year. The run game itself hasn't been all that good, but James Cook is going like that down the stretch, then the Dogs are even that much more dangerous.
We saw Oregon take down Washington State. Slightly more impressive outing from the Ducks than we've seen in recent weeks. They're still in the driver's seat, very much so, for one of those four playoff spots. Ohio State puts 59 on Purdue. I think both you and I were skeptical that Purdue would be able to really, truly hang around in another game against another top five team. And even though they're not that far in the rankings, you know, I think Ohio State is in a different class than Michigan State, certainly in a different class than Iowa. But Purdue still putting up 31 points on a good Ohio State defense. Unfortunately, they allowed 59, you know, so the game, you know, still a four touchdown spread at the end. But our man AOC, 390 yards, four touchdowns, no picks, another big game against another big opponent for David Bell, 11 for 103, did not find the end zone in that one. But all in all, like a fairly impressive effort, I thought, for Purdue, even though they had no success whatsoever slowing down CJ Stroud.
Right, exactly. So, you know, if you tell a Purdue fan coming into that one that you're going to score 31 in Columbus, like you feel pretty good about your chances. Yeah. But, you know, the return of Garrett Wilson after he missed the Nebraska game, that gives the Buckeyes, you know, three legitimate NFL receivers that you have to worry about every single play, along with Trevion Henderson. That's just too much. I mean, gosh, Smith and Jigba was great once again, and Wilson was a total beast. He was a slate changer. for DFS. So yeah, that's the type of game from Ohio State that I think is the type of statement that goes to show you that Ohio State playing at that level is a team that is capable of winning the national championship, or at the very least, you know, making the playoff and making some noise, because that offense is so electric. I think the defense will kind of be the big story for Ohio State as we get a little bit later on into the season. But when the offense is playing like that, it's tough to really contend with them. They're just so loaded offensively when they're clicking.
Ohio State opens up as a 19-point home favorite against Michigan State this coming Saturday. We saw Michigan squeak past Penn State, another really close, crushing loss for the Nittany Lions. 21-17 was the result in favor of Michigan. Horrible sack fumble midway through the fourth quarter in a tie game for Michigan. Penn State goes down, gets a field goal. Michigan, 6-play, 75-yard drive, capped in a long touchdown to go up 21-17. And then they put Penn State out on downs to essentially ice this one. I still don't really know quite what to make of Michigan, really, or Penn State for that matter. I would venture to guess you saw a little bit more of this one, though, than I did. So what were your takeaways from Michigan over Penn State?
It's just amazing to me that we're this far into the season and teams, Aiden Hutchinson, and their other edge rusher, his name's escaping me again. They're going to make plays on a given week. Like, that's just what's going to happen. But teams just feel like defiantly confident that they can just block these guys straight up and not bring in extra help. And it ends up costing them, because that pass rush combo that Michigan has is something that can completely wreck your game. And they just did it again. They were in the backfield. They were getting pressure on Clifford throughout this one. Michigan. Yeah. I think it's fair to say that it's tough to truly know what to make of them, that they like to play this kind of game. They like the lower scoring, just lean on the run game and the defense to get it done. And you know, that keeps them winning games, but it's not going to beat Ohio State. It very much makes them like the top of the next tier of teams once you get outside of like the truly legitimate playoff contenders. And one last comment from this one, Michigan's Cade McNamara had a pretty great line there. He got asked about the snow coming down in Happy Valley. And there's something just very alpha and mean about what he said next. He said, "That was the warmest snow I've ever felt." And like, there's just something to that. It has layers to it. I really like that quote. He's on my radar now.
I feel like you could put that over a screen cap from Mad Men and completely convince me that Don Draper said that. I'd be like, wow, that is really crushing. Wow.
They got the softest snow at Penn State. They got the right good dairy, and they got snow for soft guys.
31.99999 degrees Fahrenheit snow. All right, we saw Michigan State roll over your secondary team, the Maryland Terrapins. Not a ton of takeaways from that one. Still a lot to be sorted out, of course, over these next couple of weeks in the Big Ten, particularly in the East Division. Out west, though, Wisconsin very quietly rolling. Very quietly getting no respect at all in these last few AP polls. They're kind of just hanging out in like the 18-ish range. It feels like I don't know what else they need to do at this point. But the key takeaway at this point is this is trending toward yet another like Gator Bowl type of season, where it feels like Wisconsin probably finds a way to make the Big Ten title game. I have to walk back everything I said the first 5 weeks of the season, and then they get blown out like 64-14 by Ohio State inevitably in that title game. But the number one thing for me here, Braylon Allen is very real. Like, we have found the next guy at tailback for Wisconsin, at tailback U. I was in a lot of discussions regarding Braylon Allen over the weekend, really over these last few weeks. And really what it comes down to, like, everybody that I've talked to is like, this guy just looks like a legitimate stud running back. Like, Ches Malusi, he was fine. He was fairly productive. He did not pass the eye test in the way that Braylon Allen does.
No, that he is an absolute tank. It's like having almost like a Brandon Jacobs in a Wisconsin uniform.
Yeah, TJ Duckett, sure.
Yes, exactly. So like, yeah, that's just a large man who can get up to speed pretty quickly. And then once that happens, you're in deep trouble. And when you're Northwestern and you have the worst run defense in the Big Ten and one of the worst in the country, that's a horrible thing to be walking into. So, I mean, it did not surprise me at all that Allen just completely feasted on Saturday, even though, you know, coming in, he had both his ankles taped the week prior, maybe got a little bit dinged up against Rutgers, but looked no worse for wear on Saturday. He just completely like bowled over Northwestern and, you know, delivered what ended up being a pretty easy win for the Badgers.
Yeah. Yeah. That one was pretty much decided in the second quarter. And like you said, Northwestern is sixth worst in the country in rushing yards allowed. Just under 230 yards per game. Arkansas State, if you're wondering, is the leader by far, by over 20 yards over Missouri. 265 yards per game being allowed by our Red Wolves this season.
tough go for them this year and stopping the run. And hey, look at Missouri. I mean, a couple weeks ago, they were dead last by a long shot. But I guess they've bowed up on defense these last couple of weeks against Georgia and South Carolina.
Yeah, jockeying for position. I mean, no other countries play college football, to my knowledge, right? So if you're the worst rush defense in American college football, you can claim the title that you have the world's worst rushing defense, right? Or like the universe's worst rushing defense.
Yes. Yeah. No. And that's a crown that you should proudly wear. So right now, Arkansas State in the catbird seat for that one.
All right. Let's head over to the Big 12. We talked about Kansas and Texas. We don't need to return to that one. We'll mercifully stay away from that for the sake of Texas fans, the rest of the pod. But OK State 63, TCU 17, Oklahoma State, John, very quietly sneaking its way into the playoff contention. And that was exacerbated by number 8, Oklahoma, falling to Baylor 27-14. And you talk about kind of fluky results. Like I clicked on this one and I'm looking at the box score thinking like, oh, Caleb Williams must have gotten hurt here. No, sir. That is not what happened. So ineffective was Caleb Williams that we saw the return of Spencer Rattler. He didn't do much either. He just played a couple of series in the second half. But I mean, this was a game that, you know, these teams played a 0-0 first quarter. After that, it really truly felt like Baylor was the better team. And, you know, they were able to use the ground game 296 yards as a team. You had two players, Gary Bohannon, you know, up over 100 yards. I still don't know really what to think of Baylor in terms of being a legitimate contender with two losses already. You know, we're not talking playoff, but it didn't really feel to me like this was just an off day for Oklahoma. It felt like Baylor was the team that kind of went in there and bullied them.
Yeah, but Baylor is a very good team. You know, and then you look across, like you said, with that Oklahoma State result where they just pummeled TCU. Baylor should have done that the week before. That game is what is going to be. Is going to go down as one of the more costly losses for anyone this season, because if Baylor ends up as a one loss Big 12 champion, you know, it's a different conversation, but that second loss, they're not going to get the, you know, the Bama cachet where they could potentially get in with two wins. But yeah, Baylor, you know, they very much kind of adopted the Matt Aranda or Dave Aranda, just sort of aesthetic. They're not the Baylor teams that we saw in the middle part of the last decade or anything, but that they'll punish you with the run. And I mean, saying that you can hold Oklahoma to 14 points, I don't care if they're having some quarterback struggles or not, like that is legitimately very, very impressive from their defense. So obviously that they had that dialed up excellent. And yeah, I mean, that they do have that running game threat with Abram Smith and Gary Bohannon from the quarterback spot, and they have good receivers. They got Treston Abner, who's kind of a do-it-all guy out of that backfield as well. So they just had those ingredients cooking, and it, you know, worked out against Oklahoma. And Oklahoma, you know, I'm not trying to make a bad pun, but they looked rattled there towards the end. I mean, it felt like they were completely out of sorts for a lot of this game. And I think a lot of that had to do with Baylor really showing up.
Yeah, I mean, frankly, it's felt like Oklahoma has been overdue for this game. Yes. Right. I mean, they've just kind of been teetering all season. And I think they just hadn't quite faced any team good enough really to hand them a result like this. And Baylor was more than happy to do that. So the Big 12 becomes really interesting the rest of the way here. You know, Oklahoma with one loss, not out of it. You know, Oklahoma State firmly in the mix as well. They're at 6-1, 9-1 overall. Both teams are. But the winner of that game, I think that's in 2 weeks to conclude the Big 12 schedule. We could be looking at a potential rematch in the Big 10 championship game or Big 12 championship game, excuse me, a week later. I mean, if Oklahoma or Oklahoma State, I guess, for that matter, if either team were to sweep those two games, presuming that is the matchup that we'd see again in the title game, depending on what happens elsewhere throughout the country, I think either of those teams would end up having a reasonably strong case to slip in as maybe that third or fourth team.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, we'll see how these dominoes fall the rest of the way. You know, like you look at Michigan State and Michigan right now, and both of them are obviously ahead of these Big 12 schools, but you definitely see them losing, each of them losing to Ohio State here over these last 2 weeks. So that knocks them down a little bit. Notre Dame, you got to figure, will probably just run the table, finish their season 11-1 with, and just kind of have to stand pat on that. So it comes down to, you know, it is a one-loss Big 12 champ that like you said, in this particular scenario, was able to beat a very good team 2 weeks in a row to win a conference, a Power Five conference, that then I think that they would at least be in that next two out consideration and very much alive for the number four playoff spot, depending on what happens with Oregon the rest mm-hmm. of the way.
Yeah, I'm starting to think Oregon is really going to be the swing piece here, because the way yes. things line up, the way things line up in the Big Ten, it's really hard to imagine a scenario where two Big Ten teams are getting in, right? I mean, it's you have three teams right now that are currently ranked 5 through 8 in the AP, but they're all on the same side. You know, you don't have a chance to pick up a win necessarily in the Big Ten championship game. Only one of those teams is going to have that opportunity. And, you know, no team from the West is really in striking distance of the playoff, talking Iowa, Wisconsin, Minnesota. So I think we're looking at one Big Ten team. I think we're looking at Georgia for sure. I think, you know, Alabama, I'm starting to think, as long as they just play Georgia closely enough, like, they seem to be getting a ton of respect, you know, in the AP poll and even in the CFP rankings so far. As long as they don't go in and lose to Georgia by like 4 touchdowns, I think Alabama's going to be in pretty good shape here. I think there's a lot of respect for the schedule that those SEC teams are playing. And if Oregon continues winning, obviously they're going to be in as well. If Oregon slips up, I think that's when we get the most fun scenario, even though I kind of like Oregon, you know, harkening back to the DeAnthony Thomas days.
Sure.
I'm rooting for chaos at this point.
Yeah, I am too. I would, you know, just talking about penciling in Ohio State to win those next two games, like, that would be pretty wild if they were to slip up before the end of the season, or, you know, if Michigan was able to, you know, get off their almost decade long schneid against the Buckeyes, and then Oregon, you know, we talked about it a little bit last week, and we'll get into it more on Thursday. But yeah, I mean, if they lose against Utah, which is very, very possible, I think that will happen. Yeah, stuff starts getting really crazy, and I think that starts to maybe make it real for Cincinnati that they could potentially get in, because if you get enough of these teams taking losses towards the end of the season and Cincinnati ends up running the table, then I think there is that realm of possibility where they do sneak into like the 4 spot.
All right. What else do we need to hit here? I think we have a couple other SEC games we haven't touched on, right? Ole Miss 29, Texas A&M 19. Not my finest pick. I believe I emphatically took A&M to win this game.
Hey, that's all right. You know, Ole Miss, I guess, is kind of a crazy place to play at night. And Ole Miss just kind of had it cooking for most of the game on offense. Pretty impressive. You know, we talked about the total in this one being lower and how that could potentially be something that plays into A&M's hands. Like, they don't want to get into a shootout. They want to just kind of be able to play that grinded out style that they're very comfortable playing. But they couldn't do it. Zach Calzada obviously throws the costly interception. They cannot stop Jerion Ealy to save their lives. So yeah, I mean, it was just a quality win for Ole Miss, who continues to look pretty darn good there under Lane Kiffin. And then the other big result, Auburn going down to Miss State, blowing a 28-3 lead, a very Georgia sports thing of them to do, but Mike Leach did it to them this time. Will Rogers was totally dialed in. They kind of sleptwalked through the first half with just 10 total points, but then really lit it up in the second half, 33 total points in the second half. And it just felt like this whole, like, the dam was breaking, like they just couldn't be stopped after halftime. So that was impressive stuff as far as the two other SEC games.
Wake Forest back on track, 45-42 over NC State. Wake just continues to play like ridiculously exciting games yes. on a week-to-week basis. We saw 3 picks from Sam Hartman in this game to go along with 3 touchdowns. Balls flying all over the place, combined for almost 700 passing yards in this game. Unfortunately, it feels like it's all going to kind of amount to nothing. This really fun season for Wake Forest, and you're going to end up in a much more prestigious bowl than you're used to going to, which is no bowl at all. But unfortunately, they're just they're that one loss really preventing them from making what would be like people expected Cincinnati to be in the mix here. But had Wake Forest not sustained a loss to UNC, we would have like an even wilder case, I think, deciding between Wake Forest and Cincinnati to potentially sneak into the playoff.
You're right. What's better, being an undefeated ACC champ this year or undefeated AAC champ this year? Yeah,
I think the win over Notre Dame takes the trump card.
Yeah, it would. I mean, I don't think that there's really been a hallmark win there for Wake Forest, but that they have been sort of like America's just fun offense this whole time. I mean, that UNC game a couple weeks ago, like that totally lived up to it. 100 points scored in that one. This game, crazy as well. So yeah, they're just liable to get into crazy shootouts against anybody. They'll give up 40 points to Army, but then they'll also score 70. Like it's they're a fun outfit there that Dave Clawson has assembled.
How'd things go from a DFS perspective on Saturday? We could do a little bit of a recap in that regard.
Yeah, we'll just quickly run through it. So Talia Tagovailoa, I definitely liked his matchup going up against Michigan State, a pass defense that has been much maligned throughout the course of the season. He did okay. He didn't do great by any means, but threw for
350, pal.
A decent number there, 350. Again, so like that got you your bonus. So he pretty much returned value. And then if you were picking up what I was putting down as far as using that Maryland passing game, the Rakeem Jarrett definitely returned value, and Okonkwo, the tight end, also played extremely well. So both those guys were really good. Garrett Wilson was really strong on Saturday as well. Will Rogers, going with the full stack of the Miss State guys, was something that ended up being pretty profitable for a lot of people. I picked the wrong running back. I went with Marks, but Dylan Johnson, I believe, had the bigger day there. Had a couple flops in there as well. Admittedly, it is a process. I foresaw Stephen Carr being out for Indiana, so I liked Childers a little bit, but Childers could not get it going against the Rutgers defense whatsoever, and Indiana continues their complete free fall back into just being completely irrelevant at football now. So that was too bad, but that was pretty much the extent of it. And I think that paying up at running back this weekend and then finding the value at receiver or some of those cheaper quarterbacks ended up doing well. That my big miss, I would say, was I didn't pay quite enough attention to SMU UCF. I didn't quite have enough exposure to that one. I liked some of those UCF guys going into that one, O'Keefe especially, even with Jalen Robinson being back. But that game had a lot of points, and I didn't have nearly enough exposure to that one.
All right, man. Super fun week to recap in college football. We got another good one coming up. We will dig into everything ahead of us in week 12 later this week. We got Michigan State, Ohio State. Inexplicably, this is in the early window. Again, I don't know why they continue to stack these matchups early on. It feels like this season we get Arkansas, Alabama. We get Charleston Southern at Georgia. Georgia's SEC schedule is already done, right?
Yep. They sutured up the East after, I think, beating Florida. Mm-hmm. And yeah, now they get I get to relax now. It's actually kind of nice. I get Charleston Southern and then Georgia Tech to finish it out.
All right. Well, Wisconsin's got Nebraska next week. I think they're like 10-point favorites in that one at home. This might be the first time all year where I'm like, yeah, that actually makes sense. They should be favored in this game. Like that they've won me over after like now what, 5 or 6 straight weeks of like respectable football play.
It's been quite a run. Yeah, it's different than where we were in October. You'd just be like, Wisconsin somehow inexplicably favored in this game.
Borrow money from your parents, borrow money from your family, bet against the Badgers. But yeah, that mandate has officially been repealed. All right, buddy. All right, we'll study up these next couple of days and regroup for a preview on Thursday.
Sounds great. Catch you then.
Spring is in the air at Littleton Coin Company, and we want to help you brighten your collection. Visit us at littletoncoin.com all month long to enjoy 15% off your purchase. With a wide selection of coins, paper money, supplies, and more, Littleton Coin Company has something for every collector's taste. Use promo code SPRING at littletoncoin.com for 15% off your purchase all month long. Restrictions apply. Littleton Coin Company, serving collectors since 1945.